All right, hello Ken and hello everyone. It's good to be here with you. I'm gonna turn my camera on. Like I said, I think it's good to get used to the video. Whoops. It says it couldn't start my video. Well, I don't know why. But why? So never mind about that. Welcome to the Guiding Light. And I was just listening to the end of Holy Spirit Guides and I heard Laurent talking. And that reminded me of a song that he used to sing. You know, he used to sing all the standards like Frank Sinatra. You know, like I played a Frank Sinatra standard this morning. Laurent used to sing the standards. That was his love. But again, he would always sing to God. So this is a song he used to sing, One and Only You. This is Laurent.
The very thought of you makes my heart sing like an April breeze on the wings of spring. And you appear in all your splendor, my one and only love. The shadows fall and spread their mystic charms in the hush of night while you're in my arms. I feel your lips so warm and tender, my one and only love. The touch of your hand is like heaven, a heaven that I've never known. The blush on your cheek whenever I speak tells me that you are my own. You fill my eager heart with such desire. Every kiss you give sets my soul on fire. I give myself in sweet surrender, my one and only love.
Larry Sire on guitar.
You fill my eager heart with such desire. Every kiss you give sets my soul on fire. I give myself in sweet surrender, my one and only love.
Yeah, when I listen to those types of love songs sung toward God, it reminds me of the Sufis, right? Because the Sufis sing those very romantic songs, or actually more poetry, but also songs to God. So that's what that reminds me of. So we are here, yeah, very devotional, yeah, talking about God as, you know, my beloved. And, you know, Rubia, who was a Sufi saint, a female. There's a poem that she has about how every night God would come and kiss her, you know, and every night she'd look forward to God coming to kiss her. And then one night he came and kissed her and never left. And of course she's referring to her awakening. But you know, the Sufis put it in almost a romantic a romantic language often. And of course that's That's the way Laurent would use the standards in that same devotional way. So we are here for the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi, and last week we started a section called Self-Realization. That's on page 61 of the book if you happen to have it. And we're going to be starting with the second question on the page. So here we go. This is a devotee. Oh, sorry, I gotta look up a word. Before I read, I gotta find out what this word means. Okay, it's Vasana Kasaya, I don't know how to say this, K-S-A-Y-A, Kasaya, I don't know. Vasana Kasaya is the word, and it means destruction of mental tendencies. So when I read the sentence, I will use that, destruction of mental tendencies. So here's the question. Since realization is not possible without the destruction of mental tendencies, how am I to realize that state in which mental tendencies are effectively destroyed? Oh, and what page again? I'm on page 61. The second question on page 61. Except I'm putting an awful lot of English in the question, so you, you don't find it there in the book. Here we go. Since realization is not possible without the destruction of mental tendencies, how am I to realize that state in which the mental tendencies are effectively destroyed? And Ramana Maharshi says, you are in that state now, followed by an exclamation point. You are in that state now. The devotee says, does it mean that by holding on to the true self, the mental tendencies should be destroyed as and when they emerge? Ramana Maharshi says, they will themselves be destroyed if you remain as you are. Or the way that I would say that is, give them no attention and they shall die. It's funny because it is in the tradition of Hindus, who study the ancient Hindu scriptures. I haven't studied the ancient Hindu scriptures, but Hindus do tend to talk about destroying the ego, destroying mental tendencies. You know, it sounds like a very aggressive act. But actually, in spite of that word destroy, it's really as simple as not giving the ego your attention. Jay is flattering me. He says, you are living the ancient Hindu scriptures. Well, I haven't read them, so I couldn't say yay or nay to that. But you know, in spite of the language destroy, in spite of that strong, strong language, it's really a matter of not giving attention to. Ramana Maharshi used to say, cling to the self, meaning the true self. Cling to the self. When you give all of your attention to the true self, or at least all of your attention to the right mind, then you are giving none of your attention to the wrong mind. And what happens through that practice is the wrong mind just dies, or a language that might be more preferable to some people is fades away, doesn't return. And that, of course, is because thought is enlivened by your attention. You know, you've all learned the loop of experience. What I think, I see. What I see, I experience. What I experience, I think. And that's really referring to attention. Even though we use the word I think, it's not really thinking. In fact, funny thing is, there's no such thing as thinking. There are thoughts that arise and you give them your attention or you don't. And when we give our attention to thoughts, we call that thinking. Although I can't remember the specific example. I know recently there was some kind of a challenge that Jacqueline and I were working on. And an idea came that I recognized as a good idea. And so I told Jacqueline about it. And she said something like, wow, you know, great job thinking that. And I remember saying, I can't really take credit. I said, the idea just showed up and I just recognized it as a good idea. You know, and that's because I am recognizing that I don't think. I remember I also heard Byron Katie once, somebody said something to her about thinking, and she said, oh, I don't think, you know, I don't think. And then the person said something else, I don't remember what it was, but I remember Byron Katie's response next. She says, oh, you think that seeing thought is the same as thinking. She says, oh, I see thought, you know, but I don't think. You know, in order to believe that you think, you really have to believe that you're a separate individual. It's the only way you could ever believe that you think. And it's not true, in spite of the feeling that it's true, it's not true. And the way that you notice that is by paying attention. You know, and meditation to me is the best opportunity to pay attention to how thoughts just arise. It becomes very obvious that you do not think. Right? You don't think. You don't make a single solitary thought arise. They arise. And then you give them attention or you do not give them attention. That's what you can do as awareness, because attention is made of awareness. So as awareness, you can give attention or not give attention. And if you do not give attention to wrong-minded thoughts, then they are not enlivened and they will die out, fade away, cease to show up in the mind, whatever language you prefer, it's all the same thing. And this is what is meant by what appears to be a very aggressive word, destroy the ego. But destroying the ego is not an aggressive action, because in order to take aggressive action, you would have to give it attention. And to give it attention is to enliven it. So you destroy the ego by not giving it attention. It's a passive action as opposed to an aggressive action. Attrition. Yeah, I like that word. It's attrition. Exactly. So again, the devotee asks, oh wait, does thought come from the creative principle? Yes, that's what I would say thought comes from, the creative principle. Some people would say the script, some people would say karma, all just different words for the same thing. Yeah. You're welcome. And let me tell you another secret. It's not really a secret, it's just that not everyone has discovered it yet. If you need a particular idea, like you know, like there's a problem, and you need a solution to the problem, all that you really need to do is be willing for that solution to arise and wait for that solution to arise. And when it arises, you recognize it, but it's gifted to you. You don't have to think. I learned to let go of thinking a long time ago. And at first, when I let go of thinking, or what I thought was thinking, at first when I let go of it, you know, there was this intermittency about it. Like I would go away, you know, take a step back from it and trust intuition, and then go back to what felt like thinking, and then take a step back and go back to what felt like thinking. And if you really pay attention to thinking, at least this was my experience, when I paid attention to thinking, I will talk about that way, what I thought was thinking, what I noticed was it created a pressure in the front of my brain, like above the eyes and the forehead area. It created a pressure. And in fact, it was that pressure and recognizing that pressure that helped me to let go of thinking, because I started noticing whenever I would go into that pressure, and then I would go, oh, there's that feeling again, and I step back. That pressure now, the way that I would define that now is impatience. It's when you feel like you need a particular idea or thought, and you're trying to force yourself to think instead of just waiting for it to rise. Right? And so it's that impatience, and it creates some kind of a pressure in the front of the head. It feels like the opposite of relaxed. And so if you notice whenever that pressure is arising in your hat and your head, sorry, my talking isn't working well. If you notice when that pressure is arising in the front of your head, then just see yourself as being impatient and trying to force what isn't here yet. And then just choose to let go and be restful and wait until it arises. And you'll feel much better. You'll feel much better. So again, the devotee says, does it mean that by holding on to the true self, the mental tendencies should be destroyed as and when they emerge? And Ramana Maharshi says, they will themselves be destroyed if you remain as you are, right? Because if you remain as you are, if you remain just in that relaxed state of attention on reality, then you are not giving attention to the ego, and therefore it will die of lack of attention. It's really quite simple. The devotee says, how shall I reach the self? Ramana Maharshi says, there is no reaching the self. If the self were to be reached, it would mean that the self is not here and now, but is yet to be obtained. What is got afresh will also be lost, so it will be impermanent. What is not permanent is not worth striving for. So I say the self is not reached. You are the self. You are already that. And I don't really have anything to add to that. I think it was perfectly clear, and I think everyone here has an understanding of that. So I'm just going to continue. Ramana Maharshi has more to say in answer to this question. The fact is, you are ignorant of your blissful state. Ignorance supervenes and draws a veil over the pure self, which is bliss. Attempts are directed only to remove this veil of ignorance, which is merely wrong knowledge. The wrong knowledge is the false identification of the self, or we could say of awareness, of life awareness, with the body, mind, etc. The false identification must go, and then the self alone remains. And this is what's so important about awareness watching, awareness meditation. I know that the people who practice it regularly are noticing this directly. When you truly practice awareness watching, awareness meditation with any kind of regularity, even if it's not daily, but you know it's, you know, 4 times a week, you begin to see for yourself that what you are is awareness. You can actually know that. And it's funny because see is a funny word. I said you can see for yourself, but the way that you know that your awareness is because you are the one thing you can't see. You know, that's how you know it, right? That's the proof. You know, like I can see thought. I can see emotions. You know, I can, you could say see if see means perceive. I can see sound, right? I can, there's a sound in my environment. I notice that the sound is the object and I'm aware of the sound, right? But no matter how hard you look, you can't see yourself. Yeah, Jay is saying an eyeball can't see itself or a fingertip can't touch itself. These are symbols that teachers use. But you know you're there because you're seeing, right? You're seeing the sensations in the body. You're seeing or perceiving sound. You know, you're seeing thought. You're seeing emotion. You know that something is here that's doing the perceiving, and yet you can't ever see or perceive yourself. And if you practice this regularly, like I said, even if it's not daily, if there's some regularity to your practice, you know this. And so you come to know yourself through awareness, watching awareness, meditation. And what you know yourself as, and the word we put to it is awareness. You know yourself as awareness. And then you also, if you really watch, you can see that awareness as attention can get absorbed in thought, right? I mean, I'm sure everybody here has had the experience of being in meditation, having every intention of watching awareness. And then some thought will arise regarding the problem of the day or whatever. And because it's something that you value, your attention goes into it. And for a few seconds or a few minutes or the remaining time of the practice period, you are not aware of awareness. You're absorbed in thought. But if you pause when that happens and you look and you say, what has become absorbed in thought? The only thing that you can ever find, at least the only thing that I've ever found, is that awareness becomes absorbed in thought. That part, that mechanism of awareness I tend to call attention. But it just gets pulled in, and when it gets pulled into thought, you know, it's just like when we get pulled into a movie. You know, when you're in a movie theater watching a really good movie, although you are in a movie theater watching a movie, you totally lose that awareness. You give your awareness fully to the movie, and you lose awareness of the fact that you're sitting there in a theater. Well, the same thing happens. We lose awareness of the fact that we're awareness because we give our attention fully to thought, fully to emotion, fully to manifestation. That is what Ramana Maharshi is calling the wrong knowledge, is false identification of the self with the body, mind, etc. It's the false identification of awareness with thought and with body and with a personality in a world. That's what he's calling wrong knowledge, or it could also be called ignorance. And he says this false identification must go, and then the self alone remains. So our job, in effect, is to stop forgetting our self-awareness, to stop forgetting that we see thought, that we see emotion, that we see the world, but we're the seer. And again, when you see yourself as the seer, you do not see yourself as a person who thinks. You notice that thought arises. Ramana Maharshi continues, therefore, realization is for everyone. Let me turn my phone off. Therefore, realization is for everyone. Realization makes no differences between aspirants. And let me pause there before I continue reading. You know, I heard Jacqueline during her speaker spotlight a couple of weeks ago, kind of confessing. She was sharing all of these thoughts. She said, I can't believe I'm sharing these thoughts with these people. But one of the thoughts that she shared was the belief that everyone could awaken but her. And Lord knows I've seen that thought in my mind many times, and I suspect it's in every single human. Like, everyone else can awaken but me. I'm the sole loser, the sole inept. But Ramana Maharshi says that realization is for everyone. He says realization makes no differences between aspirants. And you can see that this is true during awareness, watching awareness meditation. Because somehow, intuitively and absolutely, you know, when you realize awareness during meditation, you know that that awareness is the same for everyone. You know, the mind is different, right? The big news story right now is the Supreme Court nominee, Kavanaugh. There's a myriad of opinions around whether he did sexually take advantage of a girl at a party back when they were in high school, or whether the girl is making it up for political reasons, of course she's a professor now, or whether she's just remembering wrong, or whether even if he did do it, he was just a boy then, that shouldn't matter now that he's a man, you know, that it was so long ago, 35 years ago or something. Oh, and the Democrats are taking advantage of this, or, you know, just a myriad of opinions. So we know that the mind is not the same. That's the most obvious thing in the world. We couldn't have this myriad of opinions about a topic if minds were the same, right? We know that minds are not the same. But when you go into awareness, watching awareness, and you ask, what am I? Or what sees this? Or you practice in whatever way you do to turn your attention away from identification with thought and to give your very best effort at looking at awareness. Even though you can't ever see it, it's the act of trying to look at it that causes you to realize it. It's kind of funny, huh? So when you try to look at awareness and you realize it, you know that what you have discovered is exactly the same for everyone, Republican, Democrat, Me Too movement, anti-Me Too movement, right? It doesn't matter. And so how could it be true, that thought that we have in the mind, that everyone can awaken but me? It can't possibly be true. That's just a mental tendency. I don't care who you are. That can't possibly be true, because awareness is exactly the same, and awakening is realizing awareness is what you are. Awakening is breaking that identification of awareness with mind, body, personality, world. Since awareness is exactly the same for each and every individual, awakening is for everyone, as Ramana Maharshi says. And since awareness is absolutely here right now, it isn't something that has to be attained. Awakening is for everyone now. You don't have to become more good first, right? Whatever that might mean to you. You don't have to. You just have to keep paying attention to the self and recognize the self as what you genuinely are. And that's possible now because that's true now. Regardless of how bad your mind might judge you, how unworthy your mind might judge you. And that's completely irrelevant. Completely irrelevant. There isn't a single solitary person who couldn't realize the self now if the desire to do so is strong enough. So again, Ramana Maharshi says, therefore, realization is for everyone. Realization makes no differences between aspirants. This very doubt, whether you can realize, and the notion, I have not realized, are themselves the obstacles. Be free from these obstacles also. And this is something we've been talking about a lot lately, is this idea of seeking. You know, people constantly asking gurus, what can I do to attain self-realization? And, you know, the energy of the question, typically, there are exceptions, but the energy of the question is an outward grasping. You know, like, I am not the self now. I am much, much less than that. What do I have to do to be that? You know, stand on my head, drink lots and lots of grape juice. I think Bentinho and them tried that once, right? Didn't they drink lots of grape juice once? You know, what do I have to do? Cartwheels. Thank God we don't have to do cartwheels because I can't. All of that outward seeking is a mistake. Anytime that we think that we have to get enlightenment, get truth, get self-realization, we are mistaken. The truth is what you are. The self is what you are. And the realization of that comes by paying attention to the self. Awareness, watching, awareness, meditation. As well as letting go of everything that's not the self. Ignoring the ego tendencies. I love to ignore ego tendencies. You know, when the mind says, say this, say this, say this, right, in order to defend yourself or in order to try and get your way. And I love to not say anything. Just ignore that. Speak only when it feels innocent. You know, without attachment. So Ramana Maharshi is telling us that these ideas that we have that we have to get enlightenment. Uh-oh, my recording, I have a feeling, Ken. Window, you know, it runs on my Windows side, and I hear my Windows side rebooting, so it probably loaded some updates, and my recording is kaput. But I know that you are also recording, but tonight I will need it. Thank you. But again, Ramana Maharshi is saying, this doubt whether you can realize, or this notion that you are not realized, are obstacles. And that's because they keep that outward seeking going. And instead, if there's any seeking at all, and I think there is, it's inward seeking. It's seeking to find out what my obstacles are so I can let them go, and seeking to notice what I truly am. The self that's being called here, but that which can't be seen, but I know it's here because I am it and I am seeing. The devotee asks, what is the use of samadhi? And does thought subsist then? Ramana Maharshi says, samadhi alone can reveal the truth. Thoughts cast a veil over reality, and so it is not realized as such in states other than samadhi. In samadhi, there is only the feeling I am and no thoughts. The experience I am is being still. So here, of course, he's talking about that state of meditation, where you are simply abiding as awareness, but that attachment to thinking and attachment to thought has completely fallen away. And you are just being. All attention is on awareness. And it's spacious. And in that, you know the self, you know the seer, because you're not distracted by the scene. The devotee says, how can I repeat the experience of samadhi or the stillness that I obtain here? Meaning, of course, the ashram. Ramana Maharshi says, your present experience is due to the influence of the atmosphere in which you find yourself. Can you have it outside this atmosphere? The experience is spasmodic until it becomes necessary, until it becomes permanent. Practice is necessary. Now, this is the environment I hope to create at the Awakening Together Retreat House. I hope to create an environment at the Awakening Together Retreat House where you come there, and after 3 or 4 days there, the mind just falls quiet. And you're just abiding. You know, noticing the beautiful mountains, eating the delicious food that Cheryl will prepare, happy just sitting on the deck doing nothing. Because it's in that state where you actually realize the self. But as Ramana Maharshi points out, when you leave the atmosphere, the environment that has been put together in order to help the mind to fall quiet, in order to help you realize the self, and you go back to a busier atmosphere, you're going to have to create your own environment with daily practice. You know, if you just run back to your life full steam ahead, you will appear to lose what you think you gained at the retreat house. When actually not, you've added, right? You've added the busyness back in, you've added the mind back in, you've added the expectations back in, you've added the judgments back in. They're gone while you were at the retreat house. And so it's really helpful, and in fact, Nearly every teacher says this. It is helpful to get out of your daily environment and go to another environment which is specifically set up to help you realize the self. And you get a taste there, and that taste is so important. Just like they say, a picture is worth a thousand words, right? That taste is so important because then you know. But when you go back to your environment, you need to find a way to cling to that taste. You need to find a way to taste it again and again. And then maybe from time to time, it's helpful to take a break and go back to the quieter environment. But it would be a mistake to think that you have to go to that environment in order to get the taste of the self. The environment is just giving you kind of a boost, you know, like a booster shot. But what's really important is to maintain that silence, maintain that peace in your daily life. That's what's most important. If you can only do it at the retreat house or at an ashram or in some other special environment, then it's weak. So yeah, you come for the renewal, you come for the booster, but you go home and you practice. The goal is to have that state of peace in the midst of turmoil, right? Nothing less. So how can I repeat the experience of samadhi or the stillness that I obtain here? Ramana says, your present experience is due to the influence of the atmosphere in which you find yourself. Can you have it outside this atmosphere? The experience is spasmodic. Until it becomes permanent, practice is necessary. The devotee says, one has at times vivid flashes of a consciousness whose center is outside the normal self, and which seems to be all-inclusive. Without concerning ourselves with philosophical concepts, how would Bhagavan advise me to work toward getting, retaining, and extending those rare flashes? Does practice in such experience involve retirement? And Ramana Maharshi says, outside, for whom is the inside or the outside? I'm trying to figure out why Ramana Maharshi is saying outside. He didn't use that word. Let me read the question again, see if I understand why Ramana is like outside. One has at times vivid flashes of a consciousness. Oh, here it is. Here's the word outside. Okay, here it is. One has at times vivid flashes of a consciousness whose center is outside the normal self and which seems to be all-inclusive. So Ramana Maharshi says, outside, for whom is the inside or outside? I'm going to go ahead and pause there now that I connected the two. One of the great things that I realized through my own self-inquiry, my own awareness, watching awareness practice, and I was very excited to realize it, was that there is no inside and there is no outside. Inside and outside are merely concepts. And, you know, of course, I'd heard this many times, but I didn't have my own realization of it. So when my own realization came, it was very exciting. But it's also, once the realization comes, it's the most obvious thing in the world. Let's see if we can realize it now, shall we? If we don't finish this question, that's okay. We have next week. Let's see if we can realize that there's no inside and there's no outside. Now, if you want to realize this with me, if you happen to be, you know, kind of looking at Facebook or Amazon.com or doing something else, you're going to have to stop now for the next few minutes. You're going to have to give me your full attention. And I recommend closing the eyes. And I recommend listening to your environment with the eyes closed. Just notice what you hear. All we're doing right now is noticing whatever sounds reach our ears. Now what I want you to do is shift your attention just a little. Although the sounds are still there, whatever sounds are in your environment, and although awareness will continue to hear them, I'd like you to shift your attention to the body. I'd like you to notice the sensations that are going on inside the body. You might just let your attention rest in a part of the body like the belly or the chest or the head. Just kind of pay attention to the inside the skin, right? Inside. And notice what it feels like inside the body. Just allow your attention to relax, noticing the sensations on the inside of the body. Now let your attention drift back outside to the sounds in the environment, the things that are outside of the skin. Again, listen to whatever sounds are in your environment and just let your attention restfully linger with those sounds. Now let's move our attention back inside, and the sensations inside the body, inside the skin. Just let your attention linger with those sensations that you feel on the inside. Now stay with any sensation that you notice on the inside. But as you stay with it, open up your attention so that you are also listening to the sounds on the outside. You're paying attention to the sensation in the body, and you're paying attention to the sounds in the environment. As you sit, paying attention to the sensations in the body and the sounds in the environment, look and see if it's true that there's an inside and an outside, or is there just awareness? And the perceptions that awareness is aware of. Do the sounds in the environment have to beat down a door in order to be in your awareness, like they're outside? Or are they as easily within awareness as the sensations that seem to be inside the body? Is awareness aware of an inside and an outside, or is awareness simply aware? The mind, we know, defines inside and outside. The skin is the border. But is it true? Or is there just awareness and what awareness is aware of? Is there any actual boundary that separates inside from outside? Or is everything just flowing easily within awareness? Without thought, what is your actual experience? I asked if there was an inside and outside, or if there was just awareness and what awareness was aware of. Let's look and see if that second idea is true. Is it true that there is awareness and what awareness is aware of Or is that actually all one experience? Without the mind, without mental definition, can you actually separate awareness from what it's aware of? Or is it one experience? Awareness and what it's aware of, kind of all running together. No inside, no outside, no subject, no object. Just this moment with no real boundaries, no real separation of any kind. Without thought, what do you experience? Without definition, can you find any kind of separation? Or is it just now? That concludes our little meditative exercise. And of course, these kinds of practices are the kinds of practices that help you to know yourself, right? Help you to know the truth. Some of you may not have been able to stop thinking, but that's my dog I hear, or that's the heater I hear. And of course, if it's, well, that was the dog and that's the heater and this is inside my belly, I feel it, I don't feel the heater. You know, if all that thinking was going on, then there was lots of sense of separation. But without thought, just the pure experience itself, you cannot find any separation. Lynn says it's like the inside and the outside blended together into one. No separation. Cool. Yeah. And you know, and Ramana Maharshi talked about when an environment allows you to have these experiences, but then when you leave that environment, you need to practice. That took us 12 minutes. How many of you could find 12 minutes a day just to do that exercise every day? Notice every day. There's no inside, there's no outside, there's no subject and object, there's just this moment. It's really all one, all boundaries are artificial. You can do that every day. And it's by doing that every day that you realize the truth, because it is the truth and you are directly experiencing it. Yeah, Jay says, no spiritual person awakening. Exactly. And that's kind of how Ramana started this, right? When the devotee said, since realization is not possible, you know, without the mental constructs being destroyed, how am I to realize that state in which the mental constructs are effectively destroyed? And Ramana Maharshi said, you are in that state now. See, all we had to do is take the mind away. All we had to do was get quiet, and then we noticed the natural state. And you can't take the natural state away. That's how you know it's natural. You can take away the mind. You can take away the definition. But you can't take away the self, the natural state. There's nothing you can do to take it away. You could cover it up. You can ignore it. But you can't take it away. That's how you know it's real. And my time is up, so I am going to let go. And again, Ken, if you did not hear me, my recording did go kaput in the middle because my Windows side of my machine did some updates. So I will need your recording. So if you could let me know when it's uploaded to Drive HQ, I'll make my post. Thank you.